Morning, church. Today I will be reading from Exodus chapter 1, verses 1 through 10. These are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. The descendants of Jacob numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all of that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increased in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country."
All right, be seated.
Check, check. All right. Hey, thank you so much, Reagan, for catching us up from where we left off last week at the end of Joseph. We are now moving in to Exodus, talking about a guy named Moses. So thank you, Reagan, for reading that this morning. Hey, good morning. So glad that you guys are here, and we're thankful that today is a good day where we get to celebrate our seniors. If someone hasn't had the opportunity to welcome you to Hendersonville this morning, we are glad you are here, and we hope that you feel welcome in the presence of Jesus in the midst of his people this morning. Today is a good day. Today's a day we get to honor our high school seniors and celebrate this huge rite of passage that they are getting ready to walk through. It's a time of new beginnings, different roads to walk down, new opportunities, and new starts. And with all the seasons of new beginning, there often comes new hopes and new dreams and new visions for where their life is headed. And just a decade ago, I remember graduating high school and facing a new chapter of life ahead of me, new dreams, new hopes. And oftentimes with new dreams and new hopes, some new fears begin to set in as well for what ifs in life that were ahead of me. And if you've been following along with us over the past several months, we've been talking about stories of the Old Testament and how they're relevant and helpful to our experience today in life. And we began with this guy named Abraham, to which God made a promise to make him a father of a great nation and to take him to a land that is good for life, flowing with milk and honey, something that would let them live well. And so that promise would be passed down from generation to generation, from Isaac to Jacob, from Jacob to Joseph, and that's where we left off last week. Joseph, despite everything that had happened in his life, all the crazy things that had happened in his life, Joseph believed that the God that he followed was the God of faithfulness that follows through on his promises to his people. So the people of Israel, they're now in Egypt, and Joseph is at the end of his life, and this is what he says in Genesis 50. "Then Joseph said to his brother, 'I am about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land that he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.' And Joseph made the Israelites swear oaths and said, 'God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones from this place.'" Out of all the things Joseph could say at the end of his life, he could talk about all the things that he'd done. He says, "Carry my bones from this place," because Joseph knew that the day was coming that God was going to deliver on his promises, because Joseph knew that he was a child of that promise, and he wanted to rest in that promise. However, there came a time where the Pharaoh of the land of Egypt no longer remembered Joseph. And as we continue to follow that promise, and as our seniors walk through a new season of life this morning, I want to wrestle with the question. And that question is, what is the foundation of all godly deliverance? What is the foundation of all godly deliverance? Oh, you were ahead of, or, yeah, there we go. Thank you. I'm not great with slides, so thank you for helping me out. What is the foundation of all godly deliverance? My guess is that in moments of life, everyone in this room has needed some sort of deliverance. There are people in this room that walk through hidden addiction that need or needed some sort of deliverance. There are people that walk in this room with broken relationship patterns that need or needed deliverance, right? There are so many moments in life when people find themselves in the midst of bondage and desperately need deliverance. And oftentimes, because we enjoy sitting in comfort, we might not even realize that we are in need of deliverance into a land, into a space of life that is much fuller of milk and honey than the one we're currently in. And whether you know it or not, we are people like the Israelites who are desperately in need of deliverance. And the story of Exodus is a story about a God who delights in delivering his people. A God that despite their brokenness, despite their wickedness and short-sightedness, it's a God in his kindness and his grace and his love and power and mercy brings his people out of bondage to a land that was promised. So what is the foundation by which God comes to bring deliverance into the human life? And 10 years ago, as I was making the decisions about what life looked for me after high school, I had a youth minister at the time that was very good to me. And we made it a habit to meet pretty regularly throughout my senior year and talk about what's going on in life and the things that were happening. And I was in a season of life where I was desperately in need of deliverance from the stress and the anxiety that Josh was talking about. I was in a season of life where I desperately needed deliverance from the brokenness within my own home that I was experiencing at the time. And this youth minister, he looked at me and he said, "William, what are you scared of?" Now, there's a couple ways that we can answer that question, right? Like, have you ever been asked the question, "What are you scared of?" And typically when I'm asked that question, I say, "Well, I'm pretty deathly afraid of spiders. Not gonna lie. Don't like them. Don't want to be around them. Don't want to touch them. Every time I see one of those big spiders at camp, kind of freak out a little bit, but it's my job to take care of it, get it out of the way, right?" Deathly afraid of spiders. So there's a couple ways we can answer the question, what are you scared of? Something that is a little to the surface, those answers you get at like parties or in front of a group of people, the things of spiders, fights, or heights, clowns, and small spaces. And we can answer that question in the safest way possible. And then there's another way of talking about this question. And this morning, that's kind of what I'm hinting at. I'm not talking about the surface level, what are you scared of? I'm talking about kind of what's at the bedrock of your heart. Like things like, are you scared that you're going to be alone forever? Are you scared that if you let those people into your life, they're just going to lead to heartache? Are you scared that God maybe doesn't actually like you or maybe not even love you, which is not true at all? Or are you scared of if you make this decision or make this move, it'll lead to more heartbreak than joy? See, one of the things in the book of Exodus, through the work of God and this guy named Moses, reminds us over and over again, is what you fear matters. What you fear matters. And what you fear, it leads you and shapes you to who you are in ways that you might not ever really understand. Because what you fear changes the way you act. What you fear changes the way you live. And some of us have spent our entire lives managing our behavior based on the things that we fear. And Exodus is this story, is a reminder of this story that our God is a God who longs to sweep in and deliver us. But the foundation of all godly deliverance is fear. And so in so many ways, Exodus chapter 1 is a story of two fears. And here in Exodus chapter 1, the people of Israel find themselves in a season when they're waiting on the faithfulness of God, God's promises to come through. Abraham's ancestors, the children of a promise, have been living in Egypt for 400 years, and they find themselves as slaves. And they find themselves in this amazing predicament that they never wanted to be in and crying out to God, and they're looking at their current circumstances, and it seems like God's nowhere to be found. Have you ever been there in one of those moments where you look on the places of your life and it just seems like God cannot be found? And so you come to Exodus chapter 1, and it's almost as if the writer is begging the question, how did we get here? How did we go from being a people of God to being people who are so desperately in need of deliverance? And I believe the answer to that question is found in the story of two fears. You see the fear of a guy named Pharaoh, and you're going to see the fear of two women who are on the low level of society. Neither one of them understood what their fear was going to do in the story. The fear of one man would lead to the destruction of his kingdom, and the fear of these two women would lead to the deliverance of the children of the promise. Take a look at Exodus chapter 1, verse 6. Some of what Reagan read earlier. It says, "Now Joseph and all of his brothers and all of that generation died. But Israel was exceedingly fruitful, and they multiplied greatly, increasing in numbers and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, whom Joseph meant nothing, came into power in Egypt. Look, he said to his people, the Israelites have come far too numerous. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And listen to this. This might just be the most important part of verse 10. And if war breaks out," that word if, "and if war breaks out, they will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. So they put slave masters over the people of God to..." Oh, my bad. We're doing great. We're doing great. Thank you. So they put slave masters over the people of God to oppress them with forced labor, and they built with Pithom and Ramses as stores of cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed the people of God, the more they multiplied and spread. And so the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites, and they worked them tirelessly. So you see this story unfolding. The people of God began in a place of privilege in Egypt, and a new boss comes into town, and that place of privilege gives way to social pressure, and social pressure then turns into persecution. And by the end of the chapter, the people of God are going to cry out to God, "God, would you help us? God, would you deliver us? How did we get here?" And you begin to see the answer in verse 8 through 10. They got here through fear. And I've never really noticed this morning or this until this past semester when we were walking through Exodus with our students on Sunday mornings. It says the new king had come to power. And up until this point, the people of God had always been a blessing to the Egyptians. But all of a sudden, the new Pharaoh comes in and he begins wrestling with the what ifs. He says, "What if we go to war? What if they keep increasing? What if they raise up? What if they turn against us?" It's that fear of the what if that's going to lead to the oppression to the people around them. And this morning, I wonder, as we're sitting here, how many of us live our lives based on the fear of the what ifs in our lives? How many of us lead our families? How many of us lead our friends? How many of us lead our marriages, our church, our organization under the fear of the what ifs? What if I don't get married? What if I don't climb out of the hole I'm in? What if the addiction never stops? What if that promotion never comes? What if the people stop participating? What if the depression never fades? What if God never answers that prayer? What if I don't get that job? What if I lose this job? What if I don't get into that school? What if I don't make that grade? What if I lose my spot on my team? Have you ever noticed how often we find ourselves gripped by the same fear that brought down Egypt? It's the fear of the what if. What if? What if? And you realize pretty quickly that the fear didn't just drive Pharaoh's life, it began to oppress all of the people around him. And I began to ask this question this week: Lord, where are the areas in my heart where my fear of the what ifs are oppressing the people around me? Where are the areas in my heart where my fear of the what ifs are affecting all of those around me? Have you ever noticed that when you get fearful of uncertainty, you try to control everything around you that you can control? And Pharaoh, he begins to tighten the screws. And you realize that his fear of the what if is what put the people in bondage. But in Exodus chapter 1, Pharaoh's fear is not the only fear you see at work. Jump down to verse 15. It says, when Pharaoh realized the pressure wouldn't work, he says this: "The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Sapphira and Pua, 'When you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth onto the delivery stool, you will see that the baby, if you see that the baby is a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live. But the midwives, listen to this. The midwives, however, feared the Lord and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. And so here in this moment, where the king is driven by fear, scared of losing his power, scared of the people raising up, scared if something changes, I will lose my position in power, scared of if something changes, I'll lose what I'm comfortable with, scared if I'll lose what I'll know, scared of the what ifs. But later on in the story, you see a holy fear. It's not about what will happen if the people raises up. It's about what will happen when God's faithfulness is faithful to his promise. The fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord, and it's these women who are standing in front of Pharaoh, chose not to fear in the what ifs. And sometimes I read these stories in the Bible, and I think they're so two-dimensional, so black and white. And so growing up, I probably read this story, and I was like, okay, who cares? It's this story about these people in Egypt, and they're making choices, and what really does it matter to me? And over and over and over in this story, as we walk through Moses' life, we are going to see that what you fear really matters. Most of us spend our whole life fearing the very things that don't really matter at all. We spend our time fearing the what if. We spend our time fearing the people, fearing the outcome, fearing the culture. And you get these two women in the story that stand up and they choose to fear the only one worth fearing. And they fear, and the fear of the Lord becomes the foundation of the deliverance, not just for their life, but for all of the people that will come after them. And I love the irony of this story, because Pharaoh was so scared about the baby boys being born because they would grow up and be warriors. He was so scared of the men that he had no idea that it would be the women that would be his downfall. These two women stand up and they say, God, we don't really care what everybody else thinks. We don't really care what the culture feels. We don't really care what everybody else is going to say. We choose to fear you, to know you, to love you, and to walk with you. And the fear of the Lord is what springboards the deliverance of the children of the promise. And this fear of the Lord, as I've been thinking about this a lot of week, and I've, especially as I've watched these seniors in front of me this year, it's why this story matters, because I think we live in a time where people who are claiming to be good followers of Jesus, people who go to church every week, are being racked by fear. You see it on social media. You hear it in conversations. I hear it all the time. People are scared who's going to win in November. People are scared about addressing the problem. People are scared about getting older. People are scared about dying. People are scared about losing their jobs. People are scared about everything going on in their life. We live in a time where people are just fearful. And yet, we're shockingly devoid of the fear of God. And I don't say this to make us fearful. I say this because I watch students every day step into moments of fear of the what ifs. And it's almost as if the fear of the what if is stronger than the hope of the gospel. And maybe it's because that's what's been modeled for them. As we've walked through life, maybe we've allowed the fear of the what if to take hold in our lives. And in moments of crisis, it might be a little hard, a hard reality to think that for you and myself and for followers of Jesus, God has simply become an option instead of the answer. And the greatest challenge of the church is not lawlessness or breaking the rules of God, it's awelessness. It's that we are not in awe of the Lord. And when there is no awe for God, there is no power for deliverance. And the fear of the Lord we're talking about is not just me saying, hey, you need to be scared of God. It's not just me saying that you need to have this unrestrained terror that God is out to get you. That's not it at all. But to have a reverence for God, knowing that he is the one that brings hope. He is the one that brings redemption. He is the one that brings love. He is the one that brings deliverance despite the moments of the what ifs that we face in life. And until there is fear of the Lord, there's really no opportunity for friendship with God. You see, if you want to know the Lord, it begins with fear. As Proverbs chapter 1 verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of all wisdom and all understanding. If you want to know the Lord, it begins with understanding that he is the Lord our God, the one who delivers his people into a life full of love, full of joy, full of peace, full of patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control in the moments when we're faced with the what-ifs in our life. Unless there is fear of the Lord, and understanding and reverence for what he does for his people, Jesus will only be a life coach for you. Unless there is a fear of the Lord, Jesus will only be someone who looks at your dreams and your successes and your goals and cheers you on. But it's until we fear the Lord that we realize that maybe it's Jesus' vision, Jesus' dreams, Jesus' hopes for our lives that are one that are worth pursuing. And it's the fear of the Lord that leads to this boy named Moses. That's not a boy, that's an old man. But it's the fear to the Lord that leads to this boy being born named Moses. Moses, he's hidden for the first 3 months of his life, and that his mother trusts that the Lord's faithfulness. She fears the Lord and trusts that he is faithful to his promise and puts him in a basket and floats him down the Nile River near the palace of Pharaoh. And none other than Pharaoh's own daughter would bring about the deliverance and pick up the basket, and the daughter of the man who feared the what-ifs accepts the boy that would bring about the deliverance of the Israelites and the downfall of the Egyptian kingdom. Now, I want you to imagine for a minute what it must have been like for Moses. Imagine just for a moment that you are Moses and you are a Hebrew boy because you spent 3 years growing up with your mother. You know that you're a Hebrew. Imagine Moses, being born a Hebrew, grows up in the palace of the man that is trying to destroy and kill all the other Hebrews. And so Moses, knowing he's a Hebrew, knowing he's a child of a promise, grows up in a house that is full of people who told him the exact opposite. Does it sound familiar? We live in a world where we're told we're people of a promise, but yet everything around us tries to tell us something differently. Moses, who's told the exact opposite, and when fear of the what-ifs began to set in on Moses' life later on down the line, Moses found himself at a crossroads of living into a child of a promise or living into the culture of that time. And Moses, in the moment of fearing the what-ifs, decides he's going to take matters into his own hand and makes a decision that will walk with him for the rest of his life. Take a look at Exodus chapter 2. It says this: one day after Moses was grown up, he went out to where his people, his own people, were and watched them in their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Looking this way and that, seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And the next day he went out and he saw two Hebrews fighting. And he asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" And the man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" And then Moses was afraid and thought, "What I did must have become known." Because when Pharaoh heard this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the wilderness of Midian, where he sat down by a well. And in the moments when we fear the what-ifs and take matters into our own hands, so often we find ourselves in a wilderness like Midian, wondering what direction do we go to next. But the good news of the gospel that we're going to talk about next week is that we serve a God who is a God who comes and finds us even in the wilderness, because he is all about pursuing us from deliverance. And he calls us back into his kingdom so that we might live with purpose, peace, faith, joy, love, and hope for the road ahead of us. And seniors, in life there are going to be many moments where the fear of the what-ifs will become present in your life. And it's our prayer that in the moments like this, you remember that you are a child of the promise. 2 Peter 1 says this: by his divine power, he has given us everything we need for life through godliness and the knowledge. By his divine power, he's given us everything we need for a godly life through the knowledge of him who has called us by his own glory and goodness. And through these, he has given us his very great and precious promises, so that through them you may participate in the divine nature, having escaped the corruption in the world caused by evil desires. So cling to the promises. And in the moments of the what ifs, fear the Lord, because the path that leads, that is the path that leads to deliverance and to life. At this time, I'd like to invite Miss Haley Parrott up to the stage to be able to present a Bible to the class of 2024. That's crazy to say, 2024, in hopes that in the moments of the what ifs in your life, you may rely on God's work to speak to you his great and precious promises. Haley.
Good morning. I have the honor to introduce you to our class of 2024. This is a special class who have spent countless hours playing sports, participating in band, studying, and hundreds of hours of community service, all while still participating in our youth group events. And I think that what an honor it is for William and I to know each and every one of these students, and what a joy that they have brought to us. So, first up, Miss Avery Adkins. She will be graduating from Beach High School and plans to attend the University of Alabama and major in civil engineering. Jackson Agustin. He will be graduating from Hendersonville High School, and he plans to attend the University of Tennessee at Knoxville and major in aerospace engineering. Matthew Englin. Matthew is graduating from Hendersonville High School. He also plans to attend the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, where he plans to major in pre-pharmacy. Matt Bailey. Matt Bailey also is graduating from Hendersonville High School, plans to attend the University of Tennessee at Knoxville and major in accounting. Miss Annabelle Barrett. Miss Annabelle is graduating from Good Pasture Christian School and plans to attend the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Brooke Castle. Brooke is graduating from Davidson Academy, plans to attend Samford University in the fall, and is majoring in nursing. Savannah Daniels graduates from Station Camp High School, and she plans to attend Ball State. Callie Garner. Miss Callie is graduating from White House High School, and she plans to attend Ball State this fall, followed by the university, and will plan to major in social work. Lexi Gresham. She is graduating from Portland High School and plans to attend Ball State in the fall, where she will major in ultrasound technology. Cade Jackson. Cade is graduating from Columbia Academy, where he plans to attend Harding University in the fall. Mason Lilly. Mason is graduating from Hendersonville High School, and he plans to attend the University of Alabama and major in accounting. Jacob Murphy is graduating from Hendersonville High School. He plans to attend trade school this fall. Reagan O'Brien is graduating from Hendersonville High School, and he plans to attend Western Kentucky University in the fall and major in physical therapy. Helen Ramsey is graduating from Hendersonville High School. She plans to attend Western Kentucky University in the fall, where she will major in nursing. Riley Richardson. Riley is also graduating from Hendersonville High School, and she will attend Harding University in the fall, where she plans to major in data science with an emphasis in criminology. Josh Sarton. Josh is graduating from Hendersonville High School, and he plans to attend the University of Tennessee at Knoxville and major in mechanical engineering. Madeline Schaffer. She is graduating from James Madison High School, and she plans to attend Ball State and study early childhood education. Aubrey Spurlock. Aubrey is graduating from Beach High School and plans to attend Tennessee Technological School and major in agriculture. Tian Tate is graduating from Hendersonville High School and plans to attend University of Tennessee at Knoxville while majoring in aerospace engineering. And our last graduate is Kinsey Watson. Kinsey is graduating from Good Pasture Christian School and it plans to attend University of Tennessee at Knoxville and major in marketing. Please join me as we congratulate our class of 2024.
Stone in your life, and we honor it with you. We give you this Bible to pray that the peace of our Lord, Jesus Christ, will be with you wherever he may send you. May he guide you through the wilderness and he protect you through all the storms. May he bring you home rejoicing at the wonders that he has shown you, and may he bring you home rejoicing once again into our doors. At this time, we'd like to, for our ministers, our elders, some student ministry volunteers to pray for our seniors and their families. So they're all going to get up and scatter across the auditorium as Blake leads us in song. And as they're doing that, we just ask that you pray for our seniors as well. As they transition into life, into this new phase of life, that God will continue to be the God who is faithful to his promises. Would you please stand as Blake leads us in worship?